WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? Can you believe that it is already Friday? Welcome to another fantastic edition of WKAR's Current Sports. We plan on closing your week out with a bang. Of course, we will have plenty of chatter on the Michigan State and Ohio State game tomorrow afternoon, 3:30 p.m. in the Horseshoe. That should be a fun one, to say the least. You'll get our thoughts and predictions, as well as we want to get your predictions on that game as well. Our phone lines are open, and they will stay open all the way up until we get off the air at 2 p.m. Call in 517-355-9527. Also, right before our first break, I'll be chatting with Jeremy Miller, who is the head football coach for the Pauwamo Westphalia Pirates football team. Of course, PW is still in contention to possibly play in a state championship game. They will take on Detroit Loyola tomorrow afternoon at 1 p.m. Jeremy will talk about how his team has been preparing throughout the week for that matchup. We will also invite Current State's own Scott Pohl as Scott profiles the famed Pigs versus Freaks game from back in the day. Trust me, you do not want to miss this cool feature, okay? And later on to close out our show, we will chat a bit about the Lions and also bring Reflection Friday to you. Again, folks, our phone lines are open. Call in to be a part of the show. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. But hey, you know what's next. Here are your Current Sports quick hit headliners for this Friday, November 20th. The MSU men's basketball team are looking to advance and move to 3-0 tonight as they face Arkansas Pine Bluff. The Golden Lions at 7 p.m. at the Breslin Center. The Spartans defeated the Golden Lions last year 85-52. The Golden Lions, a poor shooting team, will hopefully give the Spartans an easy dub, but the Spartans are coming off their 79-73 win over number 4 Kansas, which will definitely advance the Spartans in the polls. The Michigan Wolverines, they are also in action tonight. They will take on Xavier at the Chrysler Center. Both teams are 2-0, and the Wolverines are coming off two blowouts over Northwestern University, a 70-44 win, and Elon University of Phoenix, an 88-68 win for John Beilein and the Wolverines. The Musketeers defeated University of Miami, Ohio, and the Missouri Tigers. Tip-off is set for 9 p.m. with coverage coming from the Big Ten Network in that one. The Detroit Pistons, they will travel to play tonight against a Minnesota Timberwolves team that is 0-5 currently at home. The young T-Wolves are led by Andrew Wiggins and rookie center Carl Anthony Towns, who is averaging a double-double to go along with a little over 2 blocks a game. Now, Towns will be tested down low by Pistons center Andre Drummond, who is averaging just a ridiculous 19.1 points and 18.9 rebounds per game. The Pistons look to extend their winning streak after a comeback victory over the Cleveland Cavaliers on Tuesday. The Detroit Red Wings, they host the Los Angeles Kings at the Joe tonight. Detroit has lost 6 of their last 8 games at home, while the Kings have lost 1 road game all year. That to the Chicago Blackhawks. All right, the Detroit Lions, they appointed a new president on Thursday, Rod Wood, who is 55 years old. He will oversee the business side of the Lions organization. Wood will report directly to owner Martha Firestone Ford and is expected to speak to media today. Ex-president Tom Lewan and general manager Martin Mayhew were both fired earlier this month, beginning what Ford called, quote, a national search for the best leadership to manage our team moving forward. The NCAA will be honoring 6 former student athletes with the Silver Anniversary Award, which highlights the individual's collegiate and professional success. Steve Smith, a former four-year letter winner and two-time All-American for the Michigan State men's basketball team. He is one of the honorees. How cool is that? Now, Smith led the Spartans to a Big Ten championship in 1990 and in 1991. He led the Big Ten in scoring, averaging 23.2 points during conference play. He was inducted into the Michigan State Hall of Fame in 2001 and returned to Michigan State in 2013 to complete his degree in interdisciplinary social science. He will be honored during the 2016 NCAA convention on January 15th in San Antonio. Congratulations to Steve. Big, big honor there. Bryce Harper and Josh Donaldson, they were named 2015 NL and AL MVPs, respectively. The 20-year-old Harper was a unanimous winner, receiving all 30 first-place votes. He led the NL with 42 home runs, a .460 OBP, and also hit .330 for an underachieving Nationals team. Donaldson led the AL in RBIs with 123 while smacking 41 home runs for the Blue Jays. And last but not least, the Jacksonville Jaguars. They came from behind to top the Tennessee Titans 19-13 on Thursday night. It marked the first time the Jags have won consecutive games in more than 2 years. Blake Bortles was 21 of 30 with 242 yards and one touchdown. Marcus Mariota was 22 of 35 with 231 yards passing and a rushing touchdown. Well, that wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. Our phone lines are now open. If you want to call in and share your thoughts on anything that's on your sports noggin, of course, we want to get your thoughts on that Michigan State and Ohio State game that will be taking place tomorrow afternoon. The big dub, if MSU pulls it out, will mean that Michigan State, I guess you can draw this assumption, that they will be in the college football playoff rankings next week. But, hey, you never know. You never know with the committee. But still a big game nonetheless. Call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Without further ado, let's start the show.
To that, we're so conditioned in this region to think Michigan, Ohio State, Michigan, Ohio State, and for good reason.
Not really.
but seriously, in this region, whether you would agree with it or not, that's been the norm now for 46 years. Mm-hmm. Is there an equality here, which I guess you just answered?
In terms of us versus Ohio State?
Yeah,
we're competing. We're competing every single week, and we look forward to every game on our schedule, and there's some very big games on our schedule, and we get ready for it. But I think when you go to the end of the year, next week's game is a very important game too, because it's the end of the year. So everything gets ramped up even more because these games have more meaning at the end of the year, as well as the OSU-Michigan game. They just have more meaning because it's the end of the year. There's more things that are, you know, the win and the loss are determining factors in where you go, what bowl games you go, do you win the East, do you not? Those type of things get all entered into it. So, you know, I think that's as big as anything. If we were playing the fifth game, you know, we'd be past that. We'd be moving on to something else here. But this is our 11th game of the season. And, you know, this is it's all coming down the funnel.
Same story, different week. You know, no one really ever gives us any of the kind of respect that we deserve, that we think we need. Just another reason why, you know, we've said it, you know, thousands and thousands of times, it seems like, you know, the chip on your shoulder. Just provides more motivation to us. You know, my shoulder's good. I'm going to be ready to go. So there's no issue with that. But, I mean, it's just, like I said, same story, different week. You know, people just not giving us the respect. We like being in the situation that we're in. You know, we like being the underdog because, you know, majority of the time we come out on top. So we're going to embrace it, and we'll be ready to go, that's for sure.
You have a big smile on your face in that, hearing the question and the answer. You've gotten so accustomed to this, to hearing that same story.
I just think he answered it very well.
You know, that was a very intriguing press conference this week. Of course, as the Spartans address the media like they do every Tuesday morning on the heels of their weekly matchup, whoever that may be. And of course, this is the week that many of you Spartan fans out there have been waiting on. This week is finally here. The winner retains really a clear path to that Big Ten championship game, which it looks like Iowa will be the opposition coming out of the West. And possibly a clear path to college football playoff contention, legitimate contention. While the loser will certainly be watching both games, the Big Ten championship and the college football playoff, from their respective couches. A ton on the line as the Spartans travel to the Shoe, first time in a long time, playing a game of these immense implications. Now, there's a lot of ways you can dissect this matchup, and as you just heard, Coach D'Antonio, he wasn't pleased with Lynn Henning's question concerning how, in this state, college football fans, especially those who root for U of M, have been conditioned to constantly think Michigan, Ohio State. Coach D looked at Lynn and said, no, not really. I don't know where you're going with that. And then as Lynn tried to laugh off that D'Antonio response, he even gave another shoulder shrug to emphasize that point. interesting, though, how Lynn even brought up that question. It's been played from here, even on ESPN's His and Hers. I saw Jamel Hill play the bite as well. And she had some critical things to say about the question as well. I thought it was a legit question, and I understand where Lynn was going with that question. And then you heard Connor Cook, who didn't like the question about his injury being possibly a big factor as to why Michigan State is a 13-point dog in this game. But nonetheless, even with all this talk, these two teams still have to get it on tomorrow afternoon. All eyes will be on this game. This is the biggest game on the college football slate because of what could it could mean for these two teams moving forward. Even though Michigan State does have a loss on the year, an ugly one to Nebraska on the road, if they do knock off an Ohio State team that right now in every single poll, they are the number two team in the nation, they are the defending national champs, they have the longest winning streak in college football. There's a lot on the line. If Michigan State does beat Ohio State, it will be very hard not to put them among the top four, ladies and gents. And again, the loser of this matchup, I guess you could pretty much say it's done. The loser of this game will not play in the Big Ten Championship, and they will not have any shot, of course, at the college football playoff. Ezekiel Elliott is going to be certainly a man to watch in this game. JT Barrett is going to be a man to watch in this game. And right now, I think that you can make a strong case that Ezekiel Elliott is the front runner of the Heisman Trophy. I really do believe that. I think Leonard Fournette has fallen off now, especially when looking at his performance against LSU. But right now you have to give a lot of credit to what Ezekiel has done and what Ohio State has done so far this year. But granted, looking at Ohio State's season thus far, exactly zero of Ohio State's opponents have been ranked, and only three right now of the nine are bowl eligible. And Ohio State has struggled at times this season. Ezekiel has racked up over 1,400 rushing yards and 16 touchdowns. He has looked like a man amongst boys. He's been fantastic. And really, without his, 142.5 yards per contest, the Buckeye offense would surely not be functional. Interesting game. Again, we want to take your calls throughout this entire hour on the big game. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. There are multiple ways that I will be going, when dissecting this game, because there are a lot of things to pay attention to during that matchup, which we'll get to later on. But, of course, this is an exciting weekend. It will be an exciting Saturday also, not only for the big game that will be taking place out in Columbus, Ohio, but also, folks, there are four local high school football teams that are still in the running to possibly hoist up a state championship at Ford Field over the Thanksgiving weekend. Exciting stuff. Of course, we have Grand Ledge. We invited, of course, head coach of the Grand Ledge football team, Matt Bird, on the show yesterday as they prepare for Romeo tomorrow at 1 o'clock. And all these local teams will play at 1 o'clock tomorrow. So we chatted with Matt Bird. We also chatted with Terry Hesbrook, head coach of the Ithaca Yellow Jackets football team. They will take on Traverse City, St. Francis, Lansing Catholic. They will get it on against Grand Rapids, West Catholic tomorrow at 1. And then that, and last but certainly not least, in Division 7, Pawamo Westphalia. That's right, the Pirates. They will try to knock off Detroit Loyola. An exciting slate, and right now we have the head football coach for the PW Pirates football team, Jeremy Miller. Jeremy, thanks so much for taking some time this afternoon to join us here on the show. How you doing?
Hey, pretty good. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for joining us again, Jeremy. Now to start off this conversation, I would be remiss if I did not bring up a man who I actually saw last night. Is WLNS-TV6's Player of the Week. He has been tearing it up for you guys all year. He actually broke the single-season rushing touchdown record against Cassopolis last week with a 62-yard score. That record was previously held by Goodrich's Kirk Ellsworth back in 2004. For you, Jeremy, I mean, watching what Jared has been able to do this season and, to be honest, throughout his entire high school career thus far, when did you know that Jarrett was going to be a special player?
I think probably midway through his freshman year, we were watching him tear through JV defenses, and we thought, this is looking pretty easy for this kid. So we brought him up halfway through his freshman year to the varsity. And, he was in a backup role then, but he embraced that. And you could just see throughout even that freshman year, he just got better and better. So you kind of had an idea that was a kid that was driven and that, he was capable of some really big things. And then I've just watched him in every off season just continually work and hit the weights. And anytime we have something as a team where, we have anything going on, he's always there. And he's just a very driven athlete. He wants to be great. And I think you're seeing that, paying off for him this year.
Yeah, and Jeremy, you mentioned how, you moved him up. Halfway through his freshman season, and you saw that there was something special there. When you as a coach breaking down what makes a player special and making that move, I mean, what intangible things did you see specifically that made you say, okay, this kid is ready to move up now?
He's a unique athlete in the sense that he can go from standing still to quick, full speed, very quickly. And I think one of the things that caught our attention as a coaching staff was his vision very early on as a freshman. He would see things, before they would happen. He could anticipate really well how to set up his blocks. And he's just got a real natural feel for running the football. He's tremendous, he's got tremendous speed, but he's not a sprinter, he's a runner. And, that was just something that you could tell very early on with him that he kind of had that knack, he had that ability to find the hole, to hit the hole, and to, make things happen.
And, Jeremy, since you moved him up to varsity, the results have been a district title in 2013 and two state semifinal appearances. For you, Jeremy, is it tough as a coach to make sure he doesn't get too burnt out throughout the course of a season or even a game?
You know, we've been pretty the whole team as a whole this year. We've had to overcome a lot of injuries. I think probably it's been the worst year as far as key players getting hurt as I've ever been a part of. So we've been fortunate enough where we've had good leads after halftime to where, yeah, during the regular season, other than week one, he never played past the opening drive of the third quarter. And it was because we wanted to keep him fresh. Again, you know, we just had such a rash of injuries that, you know, he's a main big part of what we do. So we kept him fresh. I mean, you know, he's had some bumps and some bruises and some things. But, yeah, you know, it's a challenge because, you know, you want him to still have that edge and to be hungry. And he doesn't like coming out of the game. But it kind of got to a situation. where he knew that was probably best for the time, and he was always very gracious about it. But yeah, we've tried to keep him fresh and limit his load.
And you know, when teams play PW, when teams play your squad, Jeremy, they know that you guys are going to give the opposition a heavy dose of course, Jared Smith. How is he able to be productive knowing that teams are honing in on him? And what sort of game plan and game tactic do you guys approach every game with, knowing that hey, Jared has to be a big part of that offense?
Well, in order to get to Jared, you have to get through our offensive line first.
Right.
And the reason that Jared's productive, and I think he'll tell you this too, yeah, he's got a lot of skills, but our offensive line is just tremendous in their run blocking ability for him. They do a great job up front. Our fullback is a big, strong kid that likes to hit people, so he plows away for them. So even though we know that teams, when they prepare for us, obviously they're preparing to stop Jared, you still have to get to him. And our line usually gets him to that second level. Now, when he gets to the second level, you know, he can do the rest. But, yeah, I mean, we put in some wrinkles and some stuff. I mean, last week we knew that Kasopoulos was going to bring their linebacker. They were playing up close to the line of scrimmage. So we hit him with a play-action pass that worked out to start the game. That was something that we had been working on during the course of the week. So, yeah, I mean, we're well aware that people want to stop him. But at the same time, with our line and whatnot, we like our chances.
Jeremy Miller, head coach of the PW football team. Now, right now, Jeremy, you guys are 12-0 in the year. Haven't lost a game. Coasted through last week's game, a 40-3 win over Kasopoulos. You now play a pretty formidable Detroit Loyola team that has been dominating competition, much like you all have throughout the course of the year. What are you expecting tomorrow afternoon from Detroit Loyola, and what do they do?
I'm expecting a slugfest. Quite frankly, just an absolute two teams that like to run the football, pounding on each other for four quarters. You know, they're kind of like us in the sense that, you know, they have a good offensive line. They have a great running game. You know, they can throw the ball just like we can. But I think both teams probably we would prefer to keep the ball on the ground and to grind it at each other. So we're expecting a hard-hitting physical football game with them. We played them last year, so we know what we're getting into in that respect. But that's the, you know, in the weather forecast, it's going to be snowy and whatnot. So it should be a great venue.
Yeah, and you know what? This is also an interesting aspect to this game as well. When talking about how you guys compete in the CMAC, Jeremy, of course, Dansville, they were eliminated at the hands of Detroit Loyola this year, a 50-0 win for Loyola to move on. That occurred on November 13th, and now you guys match up against them. I'm curious to know, what's the camaraderie like between you coaches in the CMAC? Have you reached out to Dansville at all? Have they given you any information on what scheme Detroit Loyola likes to run and what they saw against them at all, or is that non-existent?
CMAC, we all have very mutual respect for each other. I've gotten emails from other coaches around the league wishing me luck. I sent out some good luck emails. You know, Dansville, sure. I mean, we've talked to them. And you know they've shared some stuff with us, and you know we're pretty close with their coaching staff and what they have going on over there. So there's a lot of camaraderie in the CMAC. I think, you know, obviously every week we want to beat each other, but when it comes to the postseason, the fact our conference you know, went ahead and sent four teams, and we had three district champions, and you know, it was just a great thing to see. You always, it's like anything, you know, you want to compete and you want to beat each other, but then we all want to have success going forward. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of camaraderie.
Yeah, and you know, it was interesting to me. I remember mentioning this on the show after the first week of high school football playoff action. I mean, all of you guys didn't even lose in that first week, which is pretty impressive. How has the CMAC prepared you and this team for this moment right here, Jeremy?
CMAC is a physical football. Every team in the CMAC really, you know, it's a physical grind throughout the course of those games. And I think that prepares you really well. I mean, you know, it's good. We have good coaches in the CMAC. Every team is pretty fundamentally sound. And, you know, you have to do things the right way or people are going to catch you on it. So that prepares us, yeah, I think, really well for the playoffs. And I think that's evident this year, like you said. I mean, we all won our opening round game. I think if you look at our non-conference week one and week nine against other conferences, we did very well. So the CMAC, I mean, we have good coaches, we have good teams, and that sets you up well playing a tough regular season.
Big, 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 big game for you guys tomorrow, Jeremy, especially. I mean, the community, I'm sure, will go absolutely bananas if you guys are able to pull out a dub. I'm curious to know, what is the emotion like? What's the emotion been like throughout this week of practice? What's the demeanor of your players and coaching staff been like in preparation for this matchup? Is it one of pressure? Is it loose? I mean, take me through what's it been like to prepare for this game.
The kids have been very thick, but yet very loose at the same time. We were here last year. I mean, this is, you know, we've had success. We've made these deep runs before. So it's nothing really out of the ordinary for us in the sense that, oh, you know, it's going to be week 13. You know, it's a grind. I mean, thankfully, we kind of know what that's about. So the team has just been real loose, real businesslike. I mean, we've had some pretty good practices. Last night was kind of a challenge because we were outside. But, you know, we got through it, and I thought we had a productive practice last night. So I don't think there's any pressure. These kids don't really feel pressure. I think probably as coaches, maybe we feel a little more just in the sense that, you know, you worry about getting them ready. But they're just going to go out and play, and I think they're going to come out and play really well Saturday.
Yeah, and as you mentioned earlier, Jeremy, of course, the weather forecast for this weekend, we are expecting some snow. It should be cold outside. It hasn't been too bad this week so far. I mean, how concerned are you about Mother Nature?
Yeah, you know, I'm really not. If it's snow, at least it's somewhat frozen. You know, I take snow over rain anytime, and we've played in the rain. I mean, we've had some wet conditions this year, and it doesn't really bother us in terms of, you know, what we want to do. So I'm actually kind of looking forward to it. I think we're actually kind of looking forward to playing in the snow a little bit just because, you know, it's something that obviously if you're playing in the snow, you're playing later on in the year, so that's a good thing, I guess.
Now, you know, I have to ask you this question, Jeremy. We've had head coach of the Grand Ledge Comets on the show, Matt Bird. We've had Terry Hesbrook on the show of Ithaca. And I've asked him this question. They've both had different responses and interesting ones, to say the least. For you, as a head coach, of course, this is a fantastic time of the year for you. You're still competing for a state championship. But as a coach, I mean, I'm sure that you've been driving yourself insane prepping for this game. What's the toughest part of this time of the year when you're able to get this deep into the playoff run as a head coach? What's the toughest part of this time of the year for you, Jeremy?
You know, for me personally, it's just the clock seems to slow. The days seem to go longer. Looking at practice, waiting for practice, waiting for game times. I mean, it just, the time slows down, but yet you don't feel like you have enough time. He's like, you know, the minutes just drag by, but yet practice goes by very quickly, or time that you set aside to watch film goes by really quickly. So I've always kind of felt like, you know, this time of year when you get into that situation where it's do or die, you know, where this week could be it, the anticipation for it seems to just take a long time, but yet you feel like you don't have enough time, if that makes any sense.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what, you know, Jeremy, PW, they haven't been to the Division 7 final since 2011. How big will this be to finally get over the hump if you guys are able to win tomorrow?
Huge. We had a great time when we went in 2011. I mean, the game ended up, you know, obviously not going in our favor, but it was a great experience. The community, I mean, you know, we went down there in full force. I can't imagine many schools bring more people than we do to events. And a lot of people went down the night before and, you know, stayed in some of the hotels and just had a great time. So I think it'll be huge for us. I mean, we've never won a state championship in football. And, you know, that's something that we feel like it's long overdue. And we feel like we've got the guys to do it this year.
Again, folks, 10-2 Detroit Loyola will play against Jeremy Miller's PW Pirates, which sit at 12-0 on the year. Jeremy Miller, head coach of the PW football team. Jeremy, thanks so much for your time, and good luck tomorrow, my man.
Sure, thanks for having me.
No problemo. All right, let's hit our first break. When we come back, we will be bringing you a very cool feature, to say the least, from Kern State's own Scott Pohl as he highlights the Pigs versus Freaks football game from back in the day. You do not want to miss this, folks. Don't touch that dial. You are listening to Kern Sports right here on WKAR AM 870. During the Vietnam War, there was a lot of tension between police and war protesters, cops, and hippies were clashed over almost every issue. But for a time in the early 1970s, the two factions did have a common meeting place, Spartan Stadium. Kern State's Scott Pohl is here with a look back at the Pigs versus Freaks football games. How did football bring these two factions together, Scott?
Well, Al, people who've lived here a long time will remember this little amateur football game called the Bull Bowl when it burst onto the scene. It outgrew its humble beginnings and had to be moved to MSU to accommodate the crowds wanting to watch the Pigs versus the Freaks on the gridiron. I spoke with a couple of men who played in these games. A pig, I'm using the air quotes here.
I see that, yeah.
Retired Lansing cop Doug Pollard and a freak, Bob Every. I know you know Bob.
Yeah.
These games were so popular that a documentary film was made about the rivalry, complete with game play-by-play from MSU football announcer Bob Sherman and narration by Terry Braverman.
In the good old days, East Lansing, Michigan was just another Midwestern college town, home of the state capitol, Oldsmobile, and Michigan State University. But that was a decade ago. Since then, MSU has been the scene of riots, demonstrations, and sit-ins. On these streets, the police have clashed with the students over issues ranging from war to parking tickets. But something changed here a few years back. Two police officers tried to kick some college students off a high school football field. The Longhairs responded with harsh words and challenged the cops to lay down their guns and meet them on the playing field. That first year, 16,000 fans turned out to see the Freaks win by a single point. The Pigs' battle cry was wait till next year. Next year came and the Freaks won again. And here it is, the third annual Bull Bowl. The Pigs have never won. The Freaks have never lost. It's the Pigs versus the Freaks.
Doug Pollard, let's start with you because you played in the very first Pigs versus Freaks game.
Mike Harrington was a police officer with East Lansing Police Department, and he was one of the officers that confronted the youth. And he contacted me because he knew we graduated from high school together. And he told me about it. So I organized the guys from Lansing Police Department. He contacted other police departments, and in the long run, we got about 30 guys from area police departments to play.
Now, the second year, because of the big turnout that first year, the game was moved to Spartan Stadium, right?
Correct. The idea of the game was any proceeds they got from the profits would go to charity. And St. Jude got involved the second and years after that. And they provided the funding to equip both teams. And Michigan State got involved, and we eventually had our second game at the stadium at Michigan State.
Bob Every, here's where you joined in, because you didn't play in that first game, but you were part of that second game and a few others after that, right?
That's correct. I mean, this thing grew into a monster promotion. And, you know, when you can put 35, 40,000 people in Spartan Stadium to watch a bunch of freaks go at it with excuse my language, the Pigs.
We're going to excuse the Pigs and Freaks language for this episode only.
You've
okay?
got quite a little attraction, and we respected one another. I mean, the Pigs played hard, the Freaks played hard. I don't know what the Pigs expected out of the Freaks, but I knew that we as Freaks were going to get a big charge from the police because they're proud people, they're hardworking people, and but it was just a great entertainment value for people that wanted to come out and watch a football game with a little different spin.
How serious was the football? How much planning went into play selection and who played what positions and all of that? How serious
was
this?
Well, we had several coaches, as you guys did from the Pigs, that had great knowledge of the game. And, they formed us together, several coaches, and then we had about 40 guys. And we practiced every night right out behind People's Church there in East Lansing. And we went through standard plays, and people were expected to pull their wagon. And, this wasn't playground childhood play. This was serious football practice. And, we had a lot of pride, and we did not want to get beat no more than the Pigs wanted to get beat. So I a lot of preparation went into the planning of this thing.
You had serious coaching.
Oh, very serious coaching. You know, we had Charlie Wilson, who was an ex-college player, Gary Bedall, Mike Long. I mean, what Charlie Rose, and really, let's face it, Charlie Rose, the old owner of Beggar's Banquet, he's the one that started this whole thing. I mean, Charlie was not a great athlete himself, and he did get involved in the coaching later on when he found out that his chances of playing was maybe a little bit less than he would have wanted. We took great pride in this, and we worked very hard at this.
Doug Pollard, I want to ask you about how seriously the cops took preparation for the Pigs versus Freaks games and the coaching, all of that.
Unfortunately, the preparation that we had for the games was very minimal because we all had full-time jobs.
And a lot of the Freaks maybe didn't. Is that right?
That was our assumption, that they didn't work, which was not right. But at that time, that's what we thought. The first game, we practiced two different times before we played. In the subsequent years, we may practice five or six times. The first coach we had was a former coach at Everett High School, and then the subsequent years after that, we had a Chuck Ginther, who was an athlete at Sexton High School and a college player at Hillsdale College, and he coached us.
The odds are against us, you guys. I'm not kidding you, 100%. We're picked to lose by 23. This isn't by just what people are saying. This is by the bookies. It's unbelievable. They got money going on the Pigs Freaks, but it's a fact.
We had a few college players that graduated and played football who came out for the team, but most of our players were guys that had high school experience only. We were dedicated at what we were doing, but we just didn't have a lot of time to prepare.
This might explain the success the Freaks had in the games.
Plus, the youth, they were
younger.
Most of them were a lot younger than what we put on the field. I was 31 years old when I started, and most of those Freaks, quote, were probably their late teens and early 20s.
We're talking with Bob Every, the executive director of the Greater Lansing Area Sports Hall of Fame, and Doug Pollard, a retired Lansing Police Department sergeant. Looking back at the Pigs versus Freaks games, that were held in East Lansing in the early 70s, where hippies were playing against police officers to raise money for charity. I want to find out about the equipment and the uniforms, and I'm asking partly because Bob has supplied me with some great photos from that era, and I noticed the helmets especially. I want to talk about the helmets in a minute, but tell me about where the Pigs and Freaks got their uniforms and equipment.
The first year that we played, we borrowed the equipment from East Lansing High School. They provided all the equipment for other than shoes.
For both teams?
As far as I know, it was for both teams.
Okay.
And then the subsequent years, Danny Thomas's organization, St. Jude, provided the funds to purchase the uniforms. So we had the police, or the Pigs, had red jerseys and white pants and red helmets with a pig on the side. And the Freaks had black uniforms with black helmets and a marijuana leaf on the side of the helmet.
That must have been a target for the cops, the marijuana leaf on the helmet.
We loved it.
This year, we're going to even be better. Last year, we was a victim of circumstance. So like a lot of times, I think a guy tried to put some handcuffs on me in the game, so the referee didn't see it. So this year, I'm prepared for anything, you know.
Do either of you have recollections about why these games maybe didn't continue? It just kind of fizzled out?
Strictly liability.
Oh, liability.
Yeah, yeah, really. I mean, you know what a serious thing liability can be in if it's not in the right hands. But, that's the number one reason was that we had trouble getting the insurance money. And, of course, on the upside of the Pigs, having steady jobs, they generally had some medical, but you know, us freaks who were just staying home smoking dope all day long, we didn't have a lot of medical. So, yeah, that was the key factor, was that they were afraid of a serious injury. And there were some injuries. I don't, thank God, there were no serious injuries, but, you know, other than lacerations and bruises and breaks and stuff. And I don't know, Michigan State, maybe they had lost. We had it there at the stadium for several years, and you know, maybe they were just tired of it and they wanted to move on and do something else. I don't know how liability affected them, but it certainly affected the teams.
Doug, are you recalling it the same?
Yes. Primary concern for the police officers involved was the administrators of the various departments became concerned because of potential injury and losing one of their officers for a time period that may not be beneficial to the department. And over that time period, it just kind of dwindled down with a lot of other reasons, as Bob explained.
There's one last thing I'd like to ask both of you to reflect on, and that is that it would seem to me that at least one hoped-for byproduct of playing this game was the reduction of tension between cops and hippies. Did it result in that? Did cops and hippies get along? Was there a reduction in tension, Doug?
You have to look at it from the point that the police officers that were involved in this and the hippies that were involved, the relationships that were developed on the field and afterwards in going to the parties that they'd have after the games down at Beggar's Banquet, where we got to talk and meet with each other, those individuals had a better understanding of each other. But in the overall picture of it, with you're talking 30, 40,000 students at Michigan State and then including the communities and everything else, they did not have that exposure. So consequently, no, there wasn't a lot of benefit from it.
Bob, what do you think about that?
Well, first of all, let me say that I think being a police officer is positively the hardest occupation in the world to be. I mean, outside of that, it's soldier or something like that. But it's a thankless job, first of all. I mean, thank goodness that we have them. And personally for me, I never looked at the police or the pigs in a way that a lot of other people maybe looked at them. But, you know, as we grow older, we realize that we all need each other here, you know, and life is really precious. And I felt that playing this game really established a meaningful relationship between freaks. And there are a lot of guys on that freak team that were influential throughout the community amongst their own groups. And I think that they brought a different awareness to the police department that I think if the police department knew what was going on, they would say, we appreciate that, you know. Even though we played the game hard, we hit as hard as we could, we played as hard as we could. But as Doug said, when it was all over, you know, we were down to Beggar's Banquet, we were having our beer or our pop or whatever it was we were having, and we were commending each other for a job well done in the name of charity.
Bob Every is executive director of the Greater Lansing Area Sports Hall of Fame. He was a freak in a few of those games. Bob, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Scott.
And we've also been talking with retired Lansing Police Department Sergeant Doug Pollard. Thank you, Doug.
Thank you, sir.
For Current State, I'm Scott Pohl.
Angel, around on, quick sweep to Miller. Miller, stopped at the 2-yard line. He cannot get those two, and the score remains Pigs 14, Freaks 13 at the Bowl Bowl.
How cool was that? And right now we do have Current State's own Scott Pohl, who produced that outstanding piece for us this afternoon. Now, a brief postscript here, Scott. How much animosity or dislike existed between these two during those games? Because it's really fascinating to me how this whole idea came about.
Yeah, well, it was serious football. They trained for it. It was tackle football. This was not flag or touch football. There was hitting going on. Mm-hmm. There were injuries. Bob mentions, I found it funny how Bob would refer to, there weren't serious injuries. There were cuts and abrasions and breaks. Like, there were breaks? That's not a serious injury.
Right, exactly, right? Like, come on, dude. Are you serious?
Yeah, It was serious football.
Oh, my goodness. Now, the reaction for Doug and Bob, when you called them up, because I had known nothing about the story until you approached me, I believe it was last week, about it, and you started telling me the background of the Pigs versus Freaks game back in the 70s. And it's something that hasn't been covered really since. When you reached out to Bob and Doug about this story that you wanted to put them in a room and talk about it, what was their reaction? I'm curious.
Well, Bob loved the idea right off the bat. Bob, you know, is the director or whatever his title is,
right,
with the Hall of Fame.
Right, right.
He is an amateur photographer, I think it would be fair to say, and he posts lots of old pictures of lots of things on his Facebook page. And I saw these pictures that he posted from the Pigs versus Freaks games a couple of months ago. Mm. By the way, just as an aside, he let me use some of those pictures on our website. So if you look for this story at WKAR.org, you'll have to search for it now because it was on Current State a week ago. Mm. Lots of pictures, including a game program cover and game photos and that kind of stuff. Anyway, he posted some of these pictures. I reached out to him. Bob, you've got to let me find one of the police officers and have you both come in at the same time. And he agreed immediately. Took a little time to find one of the police officers. I called the Lansing Police Department. They have a newsletter for their retirees.
Okay.
And they put a notice that I was looking for someone who had played in the Pigs versus Freaks games in this newsletter. And Doug Pollard got a hold of me a day or two later, and we brought him in for this conversation. They really enjoyed meeting each other. One of the pictures is the two of them in the hall here with their with their arms around each other's shoulders.
Right, right. So no animosity now.
It's not anymore.
Not anymore, right. And one last question for you here, Scott. Any talks? Because I also found, you know, when listening to that piece, what I also found fascinating was how it just kind of just fizzled out over time. I mean, during that time period, did Bob or Doug talk about, you know, were there any talks about it coming back at all? I mean, because that was very weird. I mean, Bob talked about it from a liability standpoint. That was the main focus of why it stopped. But I found that quite interesting.
Neither one of them said anything about talks of resurrecting this idea.
Right, right.
I think it would be very difficult to do, again, in terms of the liability and insurance issues in this day and age, putting two teams of football players together that don't otherwise have coverage for medical expenses,
right.
And putting them in front of tens of thousands of people and having them hit each other really hard for an hour.
Yeah.
I have a feeling it might be hard to put together a team that would be willing to do that now.
Exactly. Very true. Very, very true. Well, Scott, one outstanding job, my friend, and thank you for sharing that on Current Sports today.
Thanks, Al. I had a lot of fun with it.
Without a doubt. All right, let's hit our second break. When we come back, we will put a bow on this edition of WKAR's Current Sports by bringing you Reflection Friday, and of course, we will dissect and break down the big game tomorrow afternoon between the Spartans and Buckeyes. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Man, what a show. Hot show today. We started at the top of the hour talking with Jeremy Miller, who is the head coach of the Pauwamo Westphalia Pirates football team. Of course, they are in the playoffs, and all four of our local teams will be playing and trying to advance in the state championship tourney tomorrow afternoon at 1 p.m. Again, Lansing Catholic will be taking on Grand Rapids West Catholic, Traverse City St. Francis taking on Ithaca, Detroit Loyola versus PW, and of course Grand Ledge will be taking on Romeo. So we chatted with Jeremy Miller, and then we brought on Current State's own Scott Pohl to highlight a very cool feature, Pigs versus Freaks, back in the 1970s, actually held at Spartan Stadium. Isaac, how cool was that? And I was actually going through the pictures online that Scott was showing me. And Bob, who is a dear friend of the show, he's the chairman of the Greater Lansing Area Sports Hall of Fame. But I had no idea Bob played in that game, and you were pretty shocked as well.
No, I was immediately caught out. Meeting Bob nowadays, he's the last person you'd have picked on the freak side. So really interesting to just learn that
see it,
fun
though.
Fact in history.
I can kind of see it, because Bob is kind of edgy at times. So I could kind of see that fit into his personality back when he's a young stud. And yeah, there's actually pictures of him when he was young playing in that game. Very cool stuff, though.
Well, and like Scott said, if you just go online and you search Pigs Freaks, it's the first story result. You can just see the pictures. You click on the main image, and there's a slideshow to go along with it.
Yes, it is. Very, very cool stuff. I encourage you guys to flip through the, I believe it's like five or six pictures posted there. All right, well, 10 minutes left in the show. Again, phone lines are open, 517-355. 355-9527, 515-355-9527. Of course, the big game is tomorrow. Michigan State versus Ohio State on the road in Buckeye territory. Whoever wins this game will certainly play in the Big Ten championship game, most likely against Iowa, and will have a pretty realistic shot at possibly competing in the college football playoff. There are a lot of areas that you can look at when dissecting this game. I will be paying attention to how Michigan State, if they can, contain Ezekiel Elliott, who has been the biggest weapon in when looking at and dissecting this offense for Ohio State. He has shown no mercy against a slate of really less than, you know, reputable teams. Again, I mentioned before we brought on Jeremy today that exactly zero of Ohio State's opponents have been ranked, and only three of the nine are bowl eligible as of right now. So this certainly will be the biggest test for Ohio State, a team which has looked a bit shaky at times this year, Isaac.
Yeah, it sure will be, because Ohio State, like you mentioned, no ranked teams that they've played against. Now, they've put away most of those teams in a respectable fashion. I won't say it's impressive,
but
it's also something where they deserve to win the game. They never really got away with one where you said, wow, one play is different and they would have lost that one. However, especially against Northern Illinois earlier this season, that was only a 20-13 victory. This team's definitely vulnerable. They're anything but invincible like they were last year towards the end of the season. However, I'm not sure if Michigan State's the team to cut them up necessarily.
Right, and looking at Michigan State's schedule and how they played so far this year, you can say the same thing for the Spartans. They have struggled against competition in which they've been highly favored against. And again, the straw that broke the camel's back when specifically evaluating that secondary, which has been a chink in the armor for the Spartans this year. They lost to Nebraska on the road. So at the same time, Michigan State has got dubs, but at the same time, they've looked very shaky. Now, again, when breaking this down from the passing standpoint, you have to be encouraged when looking at how Michigan State secondary played against Maryland on Saturday. They were able to do some things they haven't done in quite some time. And I really do feel as though a lot of that has to do with the return of Darian Hicks, allowing Demetrius Cox to move back into that safety position, which he is clearly more suited for.
Sure.
He looks very comfortable in that position now. And three interceptions for that secondary, one from Riley Bulla, which was a pick six, 44-yard touchdown for him. Arjun Calhoun, Monte Nicholson, they also had picks as well. But the big question here is whether or not Connor Cook is going to be healthy to really cause that Ohio State secondary to really cause them some havoc in the backfield. I'm also going to be paying attention to that as well. Let's go to our phone lines really quickly here. On line one, we have Jody from Canada. Jody, how you doing, my friend? Welcome to the show. Is Jody there? Do we have Jody?
He hung up.
Oh, Jody hung up. Okay. Well, Jody, I know he wanted to chime in on this game. I believe Jody chimed in earlier this week as well. I know he's from Ohio.
Yeah.
Michigan State, grad as well, I believe, who's now in Canada. So he gave some brief thoughts earlier this week. But again, call in. About 5 minutes left in the show, 517-355-9527. The big question here is how healthy is Connor Cook right now? And, of course, when evaluating that press conference bite that we played earlier in the show, Isaac, I mean, Connor, of course, is going to take that podium and says, I'm ready to go. I'm fine. But when looking at how he struggled against Maryland, didn't even start the entire second half due to that shoulder injury, you can't help but question it, right?
Well, and last year around this time when Michigan State played Ohio State, Connor Cook had a good enough game so that the Spartans should have been effective. He threw for 358 yards, two touchdowns. Unfortunately for the Spartans, he's going to have to be even better than that, because this Ohio State team, I think they might light up the Spartans in terms of points. With JT Barrett, the Spartans have struggled against versatile quarterbacks. Case in point, Nebraska with Tommy Armstrong Jr. just lit up the Spartans both through the air and also with his feet, escaping that pocket and making plays for his teammates. So I think Connor Cook's going to need to be outstanding. more importantly for the Spartans, I think it's – you and I disagreed about this earlier in the week, but I don't think you – need to force the run game if you are the Spartans. I think that Ohio State front seven is so good. If there's any place you can really call out Ohio State on, it's through their secondary. And therefore, I think I just don't think you need to test Joey Bosa, Adolphus Washington. You know they're going to pass that test.
But with that being said, I say that because Connor Cook right now, we don't know how healthy he is. And I think that having that running game clicking on all cylinders or clicking to some degree allows Connor to not have to be brilliant right off the bat in this game. It eases him into the game, especially, you know, with all this chatter about his shoulder. It eases him to the game as rather than having him come out and having to be lights out. Now, I do believe that when looking at this Ohio State secondary, this will be arguably their toughest matchup when evaluating the secondary other than what we saw against Michigan earlier this season. I really think that the sophomore cornerback duo of Eli Apple, Gary and Conley, you got to look at those two. They are outstanding. It's up there with any cornerback duo in the nation. And safeties, Von Bell and Tyvis Powell, each have two interceptions on the year. So that secondary for Ohio State has been getting better, I think, as the year goes on. But I really do believe that in order to keep that Ohio State defense on its heels, Michigan State has to integrate the run game, which has been too inconsistent in my view. You got to give the ball to L.J. Scott. Gerald Holmes, who has been fantastic this season, I think. I think he right now has emerged as your number one back. Give him the ball. Let him work. Keep that defense honest in that regard.
Well, I'm not saying you shouldn't run. I agree with you 100%. You need to keep the defense honest. However, I just don't think you're going to win this game through the run game. I think if you win this game or lose this game, it's going to be decided by the efficacy of the passing for Michigan State. So I think you should run. If it works, that's great. I just don't see Michigan State with a battered up line being able to handle with that Ohio State front four, which is so good, maybe the best in the nation. And so folks, I think you've got to put it in the hands of Connor Cook.
Yeah, and folks, please don't forget about Mr. Braxton Miller. He is a beast, okay? I think he is going to give Michigan State some problems in that secondary. So don't forget about him. JT Barrett, Shay, we all know what JT can do. We all saw what he did last year at Spartan Stadium. He just cooked up that Michigan State defense all game. And also, don't forget about the special teams. Even though they did have a pretty impressive week and have been playing better as of late, hey, they have to continue to bring it this weekend. So for me right now, Michigan State is a 13-point dog in this game. I'm going to say 31-27, Ohio State wins this game.
Picking a close one. I think that at the end of the day, this is a stacked Ohio State team. I think the Spartans are still struggling a little bit to find their true identity, and it's a little bit in the late in the season for that. I think Ohio State actually wins this fairly comfortably. I'm going to say 42-28.
Wow, so you think Ohio State will cover?
Hey, take the line, yeah.
Wow, interesting. Well, we both think Ohio State's going to win. Ethan, I'm curious. Ethan Merrill, one of our production assistants, who do you got, my man?
I've been trying to be a little bit more optimistic about the game all week so I can enjoy myself while I'm watching it, but I still think Ohio State's got it, 28-17.
All right, folks. Well, I'm sure many of you out there are wish the game was happening right now. It's going to be a fun one. Quick reflection Friday for me. How about the Golden State Warriors? If you miss that Warriors and Clippers game last night, you missed out on a whale of a game. Coming from 23 down, Golden State continues their incredible year. Thanks so much for all of you out there for tuning in to this edition of Current Sports with me, Al Martin, right here on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. Take care. Have a great weekend and be easy, people.